Hello, welcome to PHPBB Weekly, episode number 126 for Saturday, October 24, 2009. PHPBB Weekly is the weekly live podcast where we talk all about the PHPBB bulletin board software at PHPBB.com. And apparently, even though we're an hour later than we used to be, we are still too early for some people. People in the chat room saying they need more coffee, and they can't even type the word suitable correctly. We won't name names.
Sam.
Well, it's two Sams now. We'll get to that. And people who are just not here, even though they reminded me that they would be here last night. So, inconsistencies, we will see as we go, how we go. But right now, I am your co-host, Douglas Bell.
I'm Michael Cottingham, or Sneaky Simeon, or Techie Michael.
How many usernames do you need, Michael?
I have a few more, but we'll talk about that.
Oh, stealth effect. There you go. David is who the heck knows where, but maybe he has a legitimate reason why he flaked out at the last minute, even though I'm always so hard on him, and then whenever I do see him after the show, it turns out he has a great reason, and I feel so bad for yelling him and making him seem so yucky during the show, but we'll see how that works out. Right, in the meantime, we get to kind of like a little replay of last spring, because remember Michael when David was out for like a few months and you filled in, and yeah, good times. Good times. We have quite an interesting topic to get to today, a little bit about security, but first I wanted to hit one little thing. I'm going to do one of those occasional segments that we do every so often on the show, probably often enough that I ought to be get some kind of, you know, theme music for it or something. But it is our picky correction of the week. Not that all corrections are picky, but I don't know, usually they are. This time the correction was to me last week when I talked about we got ourselves a new executive assistant for PHPBB Weekly. I did not know, or forgot, is the correct word, that there is a difference between Sam Jackson, as in S.L. Jackson, who is our executive assistant, and Sam Thompson, also known as Sam T, or Syntax Error 90, who is not. And I mistakenly said on the site and on the show that there was no difference, and apparently there is a difference. So, that's the deal. That said, Sam Jackson was very helpful last week and really made it a lot easier to pull the show off, even though we had some technical difficulties with the recording, which we'll try to fix going forward. But there, the difference between Sam's, that is our picky correction of the week. And also, not much else new in PHPBB news. We're still waiting for 3.0.6. I've heard various rumors in the IRC channels, you know, someone said there probably will not be an RC4 and that they're going to go straight to 3.0.6. I would tend to agree with that since there has been very little happening on the subversion check-ins list. Maybe we'll see one this week. Who knows? But no other news beyond that. The reason we have Michael on the show this week is you, a few weeks ago, posted a video called Web App Breakage on Vimeo.
Yes.
The subtitle, I Really Need to Find a Better Title.
Yes.
You know, I think that could be used for a lot of things. PHP BB Weekly, We Really Need to Find a Better Title. Can't tell you how many people ask me why I picked such a hard-to-say name. You have it in the Star Trek Guide security class on So What Do These Vulnerabilities Mean? It's about a 20-minute video. Admittedly, some people have said it goes a little bit slow, but it's in real time. You essentially using an XSS exploit.
Yes.
So tell me, why is it that you can do an exploit and the FBI hasn't come after you yet?
Well, what I did is Sam was nice enough. Sam T was nice enough to.
Yeah, not Sam Jackson. Sam Thompson.
Yeah. Yeah. Sam T was nice enough to write a simple web app for me, and he purposely coded it so that I could easily break into it. to show off this XSS vulnerability and why these exploits are bad. So I set up my own little server and had a victim and an attacker. Of course, the victim was running the web app. My attacker was running the tools that you saw in the video. Mm-hmm. And I just went to town on it.
Went to town is kind of relative, because I get the feeling it could have done quite a bit worse. It was interesting. You were talking about better title. I didn't know there were such tools like Metasploit and Beef. I mean, talk about really needing to find a better title. Beef is kind of weird. But it's actually like a control panel for a hacker.
Yes. Yes.
How can these things still be around?
Well, what it is that...
Such a comprehensive tool like that. I always thought hackers had to do like a whole bunch of, real hacking, not have like that fully... That could have been like a PHPBB backend, the way it was designed.
Yeah, and the reason that it's around is because when you are a penetration tester for a company, or you own your own company, you need to be able to get into these websites or these computers or whatever it is that you're doing, and you need to be able to do it quickly and efficiently. And while I certainly could have done things by hand, it didn't. When you have a whole lot of things to do, it doesn't make much sense to have everything done by hand. You need to have some way to automate things. Mm-hmm. And so this Beef control panel allows a penetration tester to have XSS inserted, and then whenever a victim goes to the page that they have the XSS on, they can get trapped in this controller, and then they can launch the exploits against that client.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of interesting. Let's kind of go a little bit step by step. It appeared that the main vulnerability in the web app that you hacked was that you were able to successfully embed a JavaScript script into the page via the comment form. Mm-hmm. Now, is that really the main... We'll get to like what that did in a minute, but is that really the main problem that allows XSS to take place, or are there other ways that things you could have taken advantage of to cause such a vulnerability?
In real web apps, there's tons and tons of things that I could have done instead of just inserting the JavaScript into the form. Mm-hmm. Other web apps do things like have get parameters that I could use.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you can use SQL injection to insert the XSS. Sometimes you can use cookies. You modify your cookies to get XSS in there. and so it just depends on web app and what they do. Some web apps allow file uploads, and if the file upload is not checked correctly, you can actually get XSS in there as well.
Hmm.
And so it depends on the web app and what the web app allows you to do. And if you can take advantage of it, then you can insert whatever you want in there.
But does it require it to be a web app that allows some kind of user input? Because like you had the attacker still had to be able to make a comment. If there was no way for them to be able to input info into a page, it wouldn't have been successful.
Yes and no. If I can break into the server itself, ooh, and access the database, and then I can still insert JavaScript.
I see.
So, I mean, even if your web app is secure, secured, you may not properly secure your server. And in that case, if I can break into the server, I can access your database, I can access whatever is on the server.
Mm-hmm.
And then I can take advantage of that to get visitors on your website to be exploited.
In that case, it brings up a question that I've seen a lot of people ask, is for a bunch of web apps, PHPBB included, store login information to the database in a file, a config file.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess a lot of it just it's right there in the open for someone who can edit that file to see. Is that really secure? If you just need to have access to the database to start an XSS attack?
Well, at that point, there's really not a whole lot you can do, because if you encrypt it, you have to store the encryption key somewhere so that the application decrypts it and accesses the database. So if the attacker finds the decryption key, well, that's game over anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And so at that point, there isn't a whole lot to do. Yeah, it's people don't like storing database credentials in clear text, but there's not really a whole lot you can do about that.
Okay. So, but I understand. It seems like the JavaScript method was kind of the easiest method that you were able to pull off this with. What exactly? I guess this is a sort of a two-part question. What exactly did that JavaScript allow you to do? And secondly, why is it that web browsers allow that kind of attack to take place?
Okay, to answer the first part, the way that web application was coded was I wanted the simplest thing I could do just to show why the XSS is so dangerous, not necessarily how to get XSS in there.
Mm-hmm.
And so in this case, it was just simple HTML. I did a script tag, and that was it. Other web apps are not as easy to get stuff in. But like I said, I just wanted something that I could quickly show off why the XSS is so dangerous and not how to get it in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then as for browsers allowing it, really all it is a JavaScript. And you know, browsers allow JavaScript for websites. And it is what happens in that JavaScript that browsers don't control. Because I can do anything with JavaScript that a JavaScript allows, and it'd be perfectly valid. It's just a sequence of events like any other program that allows bad things to happen.
Well, essentially, you do. Now, I guess I only watched this video last night, so I'm not as completely versed in it. So you use the JavaScript. Now, this kind of depended on the fact that the victim was, like, you know, lingering on the web page for a long time. Would that have made a difference in terms of, because you started by identifying the computer, the victim's computer, as a zombie.
Mm-hmm.
But that only happened while the victim was actually visiting the page. Is that right?
Yes. What happens is it depends on how and where you get your code in there.
Mm-hmm.
For example, on a heavily AJAX website, the person may be sitting on that same page for quite some time and doing other things. And so my code will run anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing I did at a competition where I was an attacker, I set up an iframe and did it in such a way that it linked to Google, but my iframe, not my iframe, I'm sorry, it was two frames.
Mm.
And so I set up my beef stuff in one frame, and it was completely hidden. And then below that, I had Google load. So people thought they were on Google, but the whole time I had my beef stuff going.
Interesting.
It just depends on how you get your code in there and where you get it in.
Mm-hmm.
But in this case, yes, it did depend on the person sitting on that page for some time.
So beef, it seems like you mainly used it for being able to obtain a bunch of this information about the client, and I guess this was one thing I found interesting. There were differences between what kind of information you could get depending on what kind of web browser.
Yes.
That I thought was interesting. Elaborate.
Okay. Not all browsers have the same functionality added in. For example, IE, there's things that you can do that you shouldn't be able to do with any browser, but because the way IE works, you can do those things, like steal the information off the clipboard.
And what version of IE is this?
IE6 and somewhat 7. 7 has some limitations in how you can do it.
But IE8, not really an issue?
I don't know about IE8 yet. I have to do some dig around on that.
Interesting. Anyway, you were saying.
There's some things that you can do. For example, Safari, the keystroke logger that I showed off, Safari lets me do more with those keystrokes than Firefox does. So in the frame example that I talked about with Google and hiding my frame, Safari will work across those frames, so I can watch what you type into Google across my frame, whereas Firefox won't do that and IE won't do that. And Safari shouldn't allow that to happen, but it does. And so it's just depending on the feature set of the browser and if those features are coded incorrectly to allow certain things to happen that shouldn't happen.
Why then, if this is known that these browsers can be manipulated like this, why does it continue to be? Because you're using very recent stuff. You're giving an example where you're using the latest version of Firefox 3.5.
Mm-hmm.
And Safari, obviously, these are browsers that are claimed to be very secure. They've all said the most secure browser, and yet you can still do these kinds of things.
With the Firefox that I used in the video, I actually used 3.5.0, and the vulnerability was fixed, I think, in 3.5.2.
Okay.
So there's very little window there. In that case.
So in other words, Firefox is kind of, right now, it's kind of hard to do what you just did in that video?
Yes. The specific thing that I did, you can't do it in the latest version of Firefox, as far as I know.
What about Safari?
Safari, I don't know. I didn't look into exploits for Safari.
Of course, Safari was always interesting because it was always so nice on the Mac, and so when it went to Windows, Apple was like, most secure browser ever for Windows. 2 days later, Safari for Windows is hacked. It's like, you can't really compare Mac versions to Windows versions, can you?
Well, Safari for Mac has had its own share of problems. And there was, for example, the carpet bombing on the Mac, which allowed people to direct you to a website and you download tons and tons of files without you knowing it.
Good.
And I believe that was eventually fixed, but like Apple usually does, it took a long, long time for it to get fixed.
Mm-hmm.
And there are other problems. CanSec West is a security thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember the guy's name, but he's very well known. And he found a problem in Safari 4 for Mac and broke into the Mac within just a couple seconds. And so Safari for Mac has its own problems. But like I said, for this video, I didn't really look into exploits for Safari because I knew I already had this for Firefox. So I used that instead.
Hmm. How when you go from Beef, which apparently was just getting information about the client side, how do you go from that to whatever you did in the terminal with Metasploit, I guess, to actually start taking control of the client of the victim's computer?
Well, the latest Beef and latest Metasploit can actually hook in together. So you don't have to go from Beef to Metasploit. You can actually go from Beef to Beef.
Oh, boy.
Basically.
From Beef to Beef.
Yes.
I'm hungry.
So basically, you can actually enable a feature in Metasploit that allows you to launch the Metasploit exploits from Beef. But I had problems getting it to work for the video, and so I just said, no, let's go ahead and show off some of the functionality in Metasploit anyway.
Yeah.
Now,
at this point, when you get into the Metasploit part, does the victim still need to be within that iframe, or just the fact that they were in the iframe long enough for Beef to recognize them as a zombie enough to therefore get the information you need to actually control them?
Yeah. The way that I did it with kind of, I kind of messed up a little bit. And I should have actually tested it before I tried it. But if you can get Metasploit launched and then insert that script information properly, and then you can have Metasploit work just like Beef does. And it launches its exploit against the client.
But does the client still need to be on that contaminated XSS web page, or could they have completely moved on and they're still stuck?
Again, like Beef, it depends on how you insert it and where you insert it. For this, they need to be on that web page in order for it to work completely.
And for, then, for the demo you gave?
Yes, yes. And then once I got in, then they could have done whatever they wanted.
Okay. Got in like when you add the information to connecting to Metasploit. When when you get to the part where you start, you know, running or seeing their keystrokes and stuff, is that the point where it's like too late?
Yes, at that point it's too late. They could have closed their browser, they could have gone to another website. At that point I have control over their system. And it doesn't matter where they are, what they're doing. One of the features I didn't show off is I can actually move from the Firefox process to a system process. Mm-hmm. So if they do close their web browser, I still have access. The way I did it in the video, if they closed their browser, I would have been kicked out because I didn't move from the Firefox process to another process. But that was, again, for the purposes of the video and to be as fast as I can to show off what I can do with XSS.
So the main things that you demoed was, you know, like seeing their keystrokes and what they were doing. What are like some of the more drastic things that can be done? And you were even saying right before we started the show, you just found another feature of Metasploit.
Yeah.
What kind of stuff can you get out of this?
Okay.
Not that we're encouraging people to do this now.
No.
This is like be afraid, okay?
Yeah. This is a very powerful framework. And there's constantly new things being added to Metasploit. So what I was saying before the show is that Metasploit 3.3, which is a development version, and I used it in a video, has a feature that allows people to take screenshots. At the desktop. So if you use Metasploit, you're not going to have GUI access necessarily. There's certain things you can do to get GUI access, but if you don't have GUI access, there's usually good things on the desktop to see. And so you can take a screenshot from Metasploit and download it and see what's on the desktop. Another thing you can do from Mac, if you get
Metasploit, Mac too.
Well, Mac has its own separate thing in Metasploit. It's not quite as advanced as the Windows one is. Obviously, because people do more development for Windows exploits than they do Mac exploits. But one of the things that you can do on Mac through Metasploit is activate the iSight camera and watch them.
Oh wow! When you do that, does it turn on the little green light that we see on the iSight camera, or?
Probably, but I haven't tested it yet. I don't have an iSight camera, actually. So, I have a Logitech thing that I hook on my screen for my Mac. But I'm guessing it does. I don't know if there's a way around that or not. But you can turn on an iSight camera and you can sit there and watch them.
Wow.
But and it's just very, very powerful. There's features that I'm constantly discovering about Metasploit. And like I said, Metasploit 3.3 is development, so it's still being worked on and things are being added. And it's just very, very powerful.
And probably you can say like one of the more devastating things is you can use, I think you mentioned something, you can use it to download other viruses and things onto their computer and things like that?
Yes. Yes.
And that's where it gets really scary.
Yes. If you... I don't want to get too technical because I don't want to scare people if I haven't already.
But I think it was just what our goal is here, huh?
All right, so when you exploit something, you typically have a limited amount of space you can do it in and memory. And so the Metasploit payload that I delivered, called Meterpreter, is built to be as small as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So that you can take advantage of that very small space you typically have. And so if you have very small space and all you can get is a Meterpreter or a watered-down Meterpreter, then you need to be able to download tools so that you can start working. And so this Meterpreter has the ability to download things to the computer. Mm-hmm. And you can start working from there as well. It also has the ability to upload files to the computer.
Mm-hmm.
And read files off the computer. And so at that point, you know, you have control over the system.
Yikes. Very scary about that. So this is what I guess we call XSS. And I went back to an old blog from last February, on the phpbb.com blog, which talked about a bunch of injection vulnerabilities, commonly XSS. Now, describes how phpbb takes care of some of these using sessions as an example. And it also says there's two main types of HTML injections, persistent ones and reflected ones. Want to elaborate a little bit about that, on that for us?
Okay. Persistent XSS is when it is stored in a database or sometimes stored in a cookie. Now, cookies eventually expire, but cookies can be made to expire a long time from now.
Like 2100 or something like that.
Right. So they stay there until the user forcibly deletes them.
Mm-hmm.
So you can store XSS in those cookies. And so if you have permanent access, you can store them there. Reflective is a one-time deal. For example, search fields, if they're not properly sanitized, you can insert things in the search fields and they get echoed back to you.
Mm-hmm.
They're not stored in the database or log files or whatever it is, unless the application specifically logs that.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not typically stored. So they're echoed back. Now, what you can do with that is if you pass someone a URL, like www.example.com/?search=, and then your script, you give that to someone else, and then they click on that link, and then you exploit them that way.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of storing it in database and then have them going to a web page and then they get exploited that way.
Yeah.
And there is a third one. It's not really used anymore. Called DOM-based.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, it's not really used a whole lot, so I'm going to that. But the two big ones are permanent and reflective XSS.
So you're for XSS. I do remember a bit about XSS from the PHPBB2 days. In that it felt, especially a lot during 2005, every other release of PHPBB2 had something to do with BB code and XSS related to BB code. I don't know if this was related to the BB code or related to the fact that PHPBB2 allowed HTML and PHPBB3 does not. But I think that's an interesting example, if you could describe it, how this kind of relates to PHPBB.
Okay. So in the BB code example, BB code could be broken in such a way that JavaScript could be inserted and with the rest of the post. So anytime someone goes to that bulletin board and visits that topic, they then get exploited. And typically you're going to stay on that page for a while because you're going to read the posts. And so you could do something like beef with that as well, or Metasploit, or whatever the case is. And you can use that to your advantage, because, like I said, people read those posts and spend a lot of time on those pages, and they don't know that they're being exploited.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing you can do is sometimes you can get stuff in, and, okay, for example, I worked on a vulnerability in SMF where we could insert some XSS that then used AJAX to connect to the administrator panel whenever an administrator viewed the topic, and then the AJAX then inserted some BB code that allowed code to run on the server in the PHP context. And so if you can get that in and you can exploit administrators and get their control panel.
For the post on Dex vulnerabilities from last February, the main suggestion it says to prevent HTML injection is to essentially prevent the two bracket characters, or the lesser than, you know, greater than signs that are used for, you know, HTML tags from appearing, which can be done in PHP by HTML special chars, or PHPBB3 does it automatically when you use the request var function. Is that really all that is necessary to keep XSS from happening for something like this?
No.
It says also attribute injection, JavaScript injection, CSS injection. What do you do to prevent XSS from happening?
The biggest way is, all right, so for example, if you do viewTopic.php and the topic ID is 1234, you know that it is only going to be an integer. And if it's anything else, you're in trouble. So you force it to be an integer and check to see if it's integer. And if it's anything else, you know that it's bad. In strings, of course, much more difficult. You have to understand what your application expects. And if you only need A through Z and 0 through 9 for your string, only accept A through Z and 0 through 9. And of course, if your application needs more than that character set, then you need to start looking at taking care of that. But those are some basic examples.
What are some things that mod authors would need to focus on if, in order to prevent XSS, or if they find out that their mod causes an XSS vulnerability, essentially for in the context of PHPBB development?
PHPBB has a very nice security framework built into it with request var and a few other things that it offers. And so, of course, the first thing they need to do is use that, because it does a very, very good job at taking care of all those problems. And then if one is eventually found in their application, they need to respond to it quickly, because my whole point of the video was to show what happens if they don't. And it's pretty much game over at that point.
However, for people who actually, you know, if they go on a website, because, you know, the victim is not going to be responsible for the fact there is an XSS vulnerability there. They just had the bad fortune to go onto that page.
Right.
What can the victim do to find out that they have been a victim of an XSS vulnerability and do about it? And I would also go as far as say, tools like either the built-in security things in like Windows Vista and 7, or the Norton and Internet Security and McAfee and all those softwares out there, do those help at all?
They do help to an extent. Of course, if it downloads a virus, your antivirus should pick it up, as long as your antivirus is up to date. But if I do something like Beef and I don't download a virus to your system or anything like that, then they typically won't pick it up, just because the JavaScript isn't necessarily doing anything bad. It's just I'm doing things with your browser.
Once you got to the point where you started entering the information into Metasploit, you have the attacker's, the victim's computer.
Yes.
Whether they close Firefox or not. Yes. Unless maybe if they restart the computer, does that change it? Or if they go off the internet, does that change?
Metasploit will typically be picked up by antivirus because A, it is very well known, and B, it opens a new port in your system. So if you have a decent firewall, your firewall should pick it up that a new port was open without you knowing.
So a good thing is to turn on the firewall, turn it up to, you know, not allowing any applications other than ones that it already you've approved.
Yes.
Like, I'm mainly talking from like the Mac side, which has, you know, it has have a built-in firewall. If you have to authorize it, now it will give you that sort of deny or allow once for every application. In order to allow it on, and of course you should probably can go in and check mark the enabling stealth mode, which is a good idea. Actually, maybe you can probably say why stealth mode is a good idea for firewalls.
Stealth mode, again, I don't want to go too deep into TCP/IP, but stealth mode basically attempts to say your system is not there because it does things with TCP/IP that other systems communicating with your system will not see that something was rejected. It just completely drops the request, like the system isn't there. And so if you can do stealth mode with your firewall, then that's a good idea because systems that are trying to communicate with your system will see that it's not even there and will hopefully not continue trying.
Does that help at all with the Metasploit example?
No.
Because at that point, it's figured out that you're there.
Yeah. Yeah. If I get in through the browser or something else that Metasploit offers, and I get a port back, and then I'm in.
Congratulations.
Now, there's certain things that I can do with Metasploit to evade detection and antivirus. I can also do what's called persistence. And basically, I sit there, and if you reboot your system, Metasploit will still come back, and I can get in again.
Oh, wow.
And so the only way to get rid of it is find out where I stuck my code on your system and get rid of it.
And it would also involve like closing a port or just a way, like, how would we keep you from getting back on the system at all?
If you can find out what port I got in through, close that port.
How would an average user who doesn't even know about XSS be able to figure out what you did? And just be able to know that what was going on and how to stop you?
Ideally, they wouldn't from the attacker side. But again, it goes back to keeping your antivirus up to date and make sure your firewalls are turned on and configured correctly. Because if you have that, then it should alert you that something's going on with your system. And if you can do that, you can pull the plug and I get disconnected while you pull the plug, and then you can run your antivirus scan and whatever else to make sure you clean up.
I'm sure if you disconnect from the internet, that'll definitely prevent Metasploit from working.
Yeah. And at that point, I'm no longer connected to the system. And so hopefully from the victim side, they can get cleaned up enough that they can get back on and, you know, if they need to rebuild the system, that kind of thing.
What about Mac users? Because you said this can affect Mac users, but the average Mac user, including myself, I might add, does not have antivirus or anything of any kind, does not back up, does not have the firewall turned on by default. They have to actually go into the settings and turn on the firewall if they want to use it. How does that bode for Mac users? Is this more of a Windows users are much more susceptible to this, or is it really more of an equal opportunity hacking expense? equal opportunity hacking employers.
Yeah.
Like that.
If I can find an exploit for Mac and I can get a payload on, because the way Apple has done things for users, like you said, you have to turn on the firewall, you have to have antivirus, and that's really Apple's fault for not providing users with those tools. At that point, I'm in, just like Windows.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think that Apple needs to start being more proactive and educating their users, like Windows has. You know, Windows had its own problems, but Windows says you need antivirus, you need anti-malware, you need anti-spyware, you need to have a firewall, and Apple doesn't do that.
Mm-hmm. But Apple advertises based on the idea that you can count the number of viruses on a Mac with on a 100 counting chart.
Yeah,
but it's still worth noting that this is kind of an example. I think this has kind of surprised me a little bit in that this is not a traditional virus or Trojan horse, so to speak. Mm-hmm. This is just a case where someone can figure out how to, you know, sneak in, mm-hmm, to your system and then cause problems. And that's sort of a different. And most people just think, when they think security, they think viruses,
right?
So, or when you have website owners thinking security, they think about their site getting hacked and removed and deleted. And this is a different kind of exploit. It's one where it's just where your site becomes a method to be able to sneak in past the pearly gates and then secretly start doing things that to the untrained eye would not realize how that's happening.
Exactly. And again, that's why I did the video, because people need to realize that the websites are not just about me putting "I pwned you" on your website. And more and more people are being sneaky about how they do things, and they want to get into the systems without people knowing, because they want your financial data. They want to be able to do other things to your system.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't see me, good, because I don't want you to see me.
Mm-hmm.
And typically XSS is not to be seen.
Yeah.
And, you know, these, I have your cookie. Well, good, you have someone's cookie, and you might be able to do something to do with that. But
cookies are delicious delicacies.
Yeah, yeah. Nice macadamia nut. But
little inside joke for those historical Firefox users.
The XSS is being used more and more to get into systems silently, because if I infect a website and you have thousands and thousands of users, well, I don't have just one server now. I have thousands and thousands of users.
Mm-hmm.
And I can add them to my botnet. I can do financial data and things that wouldn't necessarily be on a server.
Mm-hmm. And that even gets to the point of, you know, why this is really wide range. You should be doing certain computing practices, like don't store passwords or financial info in a plain text file.
Mm-hmm.
Get a tool like one on the Mac, 1Password, for example, where you can store this sensitive data in an encrypted file. So that, you know, or KeePass for Windows. Thank you, Syntax Error 90. And, you know, just there are, even if you're not, you know, actively doing that stuff, there's always insecurity. It's just everywhere. You got to be thinking about it when you're on the internet, and this goes for Mac users too. What would you say, other than that, are some best practices just for users who are browsing websites in order to try to avoid this kind of attack, or can they help it at all?
For Firefox users, use NodeScript. And NodeScript is somewhat of a pain to set up, at least initially, because you have to go to a website and you have to enable JavaScript for that site. And that is a huge pain to set up, and I know that. But
I think Syntax Error 90 has a link to that in the chat room.
Oh, good. And yes, I know I have a home. I can't really do anything about that. I'm in a small apartment, so. Yeah. the NoScript is really helpful because you have to go to a website and check to see if you can trust it. And typically you can trust your bank websites apart from someone breaking into them.
If you can log into it, that's my hard part.
Yeah.
It takes forever to log in.
But typically you can trust your bank websites in general. So you can enable JavaScript for that bank website and that bank website alone. And then if you go to a strange website, that JavaScript is off by default and that website can't do anything with you.
Mm-hmm.
As far as JavaScript is concerned. NoScript also blocks QuickTime and Windows Media and various other things by default. And so now that helps significantly as well.
Mm. What about other browser users, or are they just stuck?
To be honest, I don't know about any other browser because I don't really use any other browser.
Oh, bad for you.
IE users, I think there's a similar add-on that IE users can find. I don't know where it is. Yes, thank you.
Syntax Error 90 with all the quotes today. If you are using IE, grow up.
Yeah.
Better browser. Tell it to the 60-70% of people out there, Syntax.
But I don't know where you can find it, so I couldn't give you a link right now. But and I'm pretty sure there's a similar plugin for IE.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Safari, I haven't seen anything like that for Safari. And I'm pretty sure there is a version of NoScript or something similar for Chrome.
But yeah, and I just got a Mac version out this week, so that's nice. But I guess ultimately it really does kind of come down to this is something that everyone should be aware of, but developers should be paying most close attention to, and mod authors should be paying most close attention to.
Yeah.
Because they're the ones that can keep it from happening. And it doesn't seem like it's too hard to keep it from happening. As long as you're keeping an eye on how end users can interact with your site, and that's why the main wariness, at least for PHPBB, is with mods.
Uh-huh.
And how that and how that works. And so you got to that because – and that's a very good reason why you should always download from the mod database.
Yep.
They check for it.
And, of course, you know, practice safe browsing. Don't go to questionable websites.
Mm-hmm.
When I did help desk computer technician type stuff, more often than not, people got nasty stuff because they went to websites they shouldn't have.
Yeah.
And stay away from those websites. And you know, you won't be 100% safe, but you'll be safer.
Particularly these days, with the popularity of Twitter and things like this, be very careful about short website URLs.
Mm-hmm.
I had a thing this week on Twitter. You know how you can hit do at replies to people on Twitter?
Mm-hmm.
And it just shows up in their stream. I had someone this week who did an at reply to me on Twitter. Now, fortunately, there is a little hidden feature for Twitterific on the iPod Touch and iPhone. If they have one of those little short URLs, you can tap and hold on the URL, and it will actually show you what the link that that the short URL would send you to, and it was a porn site.
Yeah.
So that's a way of being careful. You know, before you actually go to the site, finding out where those go to, because those short URLs can be you got to be very careful with them. If they're not coming from a trusted source, they could be taking you somewhere that you don't want to go to, and then all of a sudden, there's all kinds of bad things that could happen. So,
yeah.
And this is just a random person on Twitter. As soon as I saw that, I went in and blocked them. But you got to be careful about things like that.
Tweet
these days.
TweetDeck actually has a similar feature. It's off by default, unfortunately. I wish they enabled it by default. But you can actually click a link on TweetDeck, and it'll pop up and show you where it goes.
Yeah. So, but just an example. You've got to be very careful on the internet, and new things come out all the time. These short URL type things, really no one cared about much about them a year ago. But they've really taken off, and you know, it was once just tiny URL. Now it's Bitly and Twirl, and there's so many of these, and a lot of it has to do with Twitter, just in order to keep it down to 140 characters. So be very careful overall when you're using the internet.
Tiny URL actually has something on the website.
A preview thing, right?
Yes, you can go onto the website and enable a preview, and so any tiny URL you go to will go to their preview section first, and allow you to choose if you want to visit the website. I wish more short URL services would offer that, but far, I think Tiny URL is the only one that does that.
Mm-hmm. So overall, Web App Breakage Part 1, what are your plans for Part 2?
Part 2, I plan to do SQL injection, and one of the things I want to show is how I can use SQL injection to write to the file system on the server.
Mm-hmm.
And then from writing to the file system, I can also do command execution on the server.
Mm-hmm. Is that how the phpbb.com site was taken down when they had that PHP list vulnerability that last January?
I think so. I don't remember offhand.
Maybe you'll know by the time we talk about that. And you plan to get a better title for that?
Yeah.
You suggested?
Yeah.
Not that it's a bad idea for a title, but there you go. All right. But anyway, if you have other questions, there is the topic in the security class forum on Star Trek Guide. There's a whole bunch of that forum is really kind of taken off. A bunch of other topics in there, some of the security lessons from back then. You know, David did a few last winter. Find the vulnerability and exploit things, and of course, you know, Top Down has one. Like, how many security holes? There are some people who have said that they have had some. Things got to be careful of. So there's a bunch out there. We can talk about. We talked about security about almost as much as we talked about captures this year. So talked way too much about captures this year. So there you go. Moving on, to make it a nice short show, our PHP poll question continues for one more week. If you were to add a step to the mod validation workflow, what would it be? Go ahead to our website and vote in that poll question. We will reveal the results next week. Our mod of the week, just because I want to, is the Crazy Maths CAPTCHA plugin by Evil Heart. We mentioned this. This was the one CAPTCHA plugin that was not in competition during the contest for conflict of interest reasons. But it's still a really cool CAPTCHA. And by cool, I mean bad. When we talked about this first time about a month and a half ago, Igor told us that he got the inspiration for this based on the time when we were looking at a bunch of the world's worst CAPTCHA plugins. But essentially, it is based on the use of Mimitex, which apparently is a precompiled binary, and also LaTeX notation, which has nothing to do with rubber. So that was not, I don't claim that quote, that was Evil Heart's quote, to allow you to create complex math equations as the CAPTCHA that someone has to solve. And not only that, but it does this by generating an image, which I presume makes it harder for an automated thing to have to figure it out. Because I'm sure that you could theoretically put it into a graphing calculator or something like that, or Google the answer to the question, but it'll be harder when the CAPTCHA breaker has to sort of read the image to figure out what it's saying. which can be all kinds of things, because you can do very complex or very basic things like this. You install it, you have to go to a web page for Mimitex, download the precompiled library, depending on which OS your server is running off of, which is usually either Linux or Windows, or in rarer cases, Mac OS X. Upload the CGI file to your CGI bin folder. Then when you do that, you can install the CAPTCHA plugin, and you do need to do a little bit of learning about LaTeX-style notation in order to be able to get it to look right. But you could simply just answer a simple question like 1 plus 1. And again, you have since these are questions that you can make up, you have full control over how hard or easy they are. A benefit would be that it is in the form of an image rather than plain text, which does make it harder for the would-be CAPTCHA attacker to try to figure it out. Or if you have a board for mathematicians or rich people who own graphing calculators and keep them by their computer all the time, then you can do a very complicated question like his screenshot, the sine of x times x over 2x equals 42. Which I could probably solve if I had time. But I'm in the middle of a podcast, so we're not going to do that right now. But that said, this was originally a proof of concept idea for testing the CAPTCHA system, but I think you could argue that it has some use, especially if you're going to opt to make the CAPTCHA plugin one that's simpler than the crazy example you could give. You could do simple arithmetic, and it's a nice way to implement that. So go ahead, check it out. Crazy Maths CAPTCHA plugin, the longest description I will ever give for a CAPTCHA plugin as this week's mod of the week. And the style of the week, this is kind of more of a basic style, but it's a recent one, since now that we have a few new styles going through the styles team. This one is called Static. Whoops, if I can get the link in the chat room, there we go. It is Static by Spica. Very much ProSilver based, although has some nice use of the header, a nice big bold header, and I also kind of like the orange and black, noting that next week is Halloween, and I always like to pick sort of holiday related themes this time of year, just because I think it's kind of fun. So, and I would hope that you can probably do some customization to the CSS if you want to make it look a little more interesting, maybe even get some image in the header rather than just a big black background. But it's a nice layout that stands out, has a little bit wider width, still a fixed width, but wider width than you get on phpb.com normally. And a nice big orange bar that really highlights the main links. So that's just because it's the best one I had. Static by Spica. It's a relatively new style, and it is this week's style of the week. So that wraps up this show. We might just keep it under an hour if we're lucky for this PHP BB Weekly. Our website, phpbbweekly.net, where you can find the links of the stuff we talked about on this show, and also all of our past episodes. Join in live every Saturday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time at phpbbweekly.net/live. Now, it's that time of year again when we do have to do a little bit of a description of the fun of daylight savings time. Yay! And this is annoying because we only have to do this because we're a live show and people listen to us all around the world. Because we as a human race cannot seem to have a general agreement about what time it is, there are different times when different countries do follow daylight savings time. A lot of countries in Europe, for example, who observe daylight savings time, it will be ending tomorrow, which is the last Sunday of October. The United States and Canada, however, are not ending daylight savings time until the following week, Sunday, November 1st, for the first Sunday in November. Now, because our show is based in the United States, we stick our time to 1 p.m. Eastern. That means next week our UTC time will be 1700 or 5 p.m. UTC time. And the following week, when we leave daylight savings time, it goes to 1800 or 6 p.m. UTC time. But always 1 p.m. according to the Eastern time zone. So, if you're in Europe and your daylight savings time ends tomorrow, please be sure to join us an hour earlier, and then the following week back at the usual time. If you don't observe daylight savings time at all, then please, on November 7th, join us an hour later. Does that make any sense at all? No. So in that case, just go on our website. When you see the thing that says what time it is, click on the View Local Time link, and that'll tell you what time to show up. So we don't want you to have to miss it. So with that out of the way, our next episode will be number 127, next Saturday, October 31st. It's going to be our Halloween episode. We haven't done Halloween episodes before, but we can't pass up the opportunity. So we don't know what we're going to do yet. We might have some fun, do Halloween character impersonations, tell some horror stories, maybe some PHP or security horror stories. Who knows? We'll have some fun. But it's just going to be a fun episode next week for Halloween, 1 p.m. Eastern, 700 UTC. Join us for that next week. Also, our forum at StarTrekGuide.com. And with that, I really need to find a better title or better ending for all of that. I'm Douglas Bell, and big thanks to Michael once again for joining us.
Pog.
What? What was that? Oh, that Bay Area air is really messing you up now.
I'm still extremely sleepy. I get very little sleep during the work week.
And with a little nod in spirit to David Lewis, who hopefully will be here to share in the fun next week. Thanks for listening. Remember, a successful community begins with you. Tag, you're it. See you next week. Bye, everybody.